10:23, building bridges. Just play the melody, it's good. Good morning.
Good morning.
Welcome to the First Unitarian Church of Alton. My name is Joy Heft. Today in our pulpit, we have Julie Taylor. She is a community minister affiliated with Emerson, but serves all the UU churches in the area. Julie works with the UU Trauma Response Ministry and is also a chaplain in the International Guard. So welcome to this place. This is a home where no revealed truths are promoted and no scripture or human being accepted as infallible. This is a place for searching for truth. But we are believers. We believe in intellectual freedom. We believe in justice. We believe in compassion and concern for each other and the whole world. We believe in commitment to those ideals which makes us caring and active in the struggles for human dignity. We are Unitarian Universalists. I offer my welcome to you, and in particular, those who are first-time visitors. We welcome you and especially encourage you to join us after worship for coffee and conversation. Information about the church is available from the new member desk during coffee hour and from any of the people here gathered. We invite you to fill out one of our visitor cards from the back of your hymnal and place it in the offering plate or give it to an usher. We'll send you our church newsletter for the next 3 months to let you know about the programs and activities going on here at church. We are glad you are here and hope to see you again on future Sundays. We welcome everyone into this home of comfort, spirit, justice, and hope. Now I have a couple of announcements. The first one's for Mary Johnson. Sitting right here. If you asked for a name tag recently, please check the desk in the Kate Worker Room in the Fellowship Hall because there are several there waiting to be picked up. Kelly, don't sit down. The next announcement is from Kelly. The Ministerial Search Committee will be emailing invitations to the Congregational Survey this week. It is very important that we hear feedback from as many folks as we can. So please take the time to follow the link in the email and fill out the survey. The more we know, the better we can fit a minister to our congregation. The deadline for completing is September 18th. But the sooner we get the surveys back, the fewer times we will have to remind you. Okay. From Lane Simpson, who's in the very back. Let's see. Lane will meet after church for the next 4 Sundays with anyone who wants to give an input on the ministerial search. See her at the fireplace in the worker room. Today she might be a bit late due to committee work, but should be there by 11:20. Those are our announcements, and so we begin our service with the prelude. Our call to worship. Come into this place of peace and let its silence heal your spirit. Come into this place of memory and let its history warm your soul. Come into this place of prophecy and power and let its vision change your heart. By William F. Schultz.
Is Ben going to light the chalice? We light this chalice, symbol of Unitarian Universalism. May it remind us that the divine spark in all of creation, the power of love to heal what is broken, and to be grateful for life's blessings every day. Please rise as your spirits and bodies allow and join in singing hymn number 1060 in the Teal Hymnal, As We Sing of Hope and Joy. It will also be up in the slides. This morning. Does anybody know this story? Oh, excellent. No? Yes? Some? Okay. So if you don't, this is a good one. So this story is called, and luckily y'all get to read it up there, and I'm going to read it from here, Goldilocks and the Three Dinosaurs by Mo Willems. Go ahead there. It starts out, once upon a time, there were three dinosaurs. Papa Dinosaur, Mama Dinosaur, and some other dinosaur who happened to be visiting from Norway. Go ahead. One day, for no particular reason, the three dinosaurs made up their beds, positioned their chairs just so, and cooked three bowls of delicious chocolate pudding at varying temperatures. Oh boy, said Papa Dinosaur in his loud, booming voice, it is finally time to leave and go to the, someplace else. Yes, continued Mama Dinosaur, I sure hope no innocent little succulent child happens by our unlocked home while we are someplace else. Go ahead. Then the other dinosaur made a loud noise that sounded like a big evil laugh, but was probably just a polite Norwegian expression. Har, 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 har. Okay. The three dinosaurs went someplace else and were definitely not hiding in the woods waiting for an unsuspecting kid to come by. Go ahead. Sure enough, 5 minutes later, a poorly supervised little girl named Goldilocks came traipsing along. Just then, the forest boomed with what could have been a dinosaur yelling, "Gotcha!" But I'm pretty sure it was just the wind. The loud noise was immediately followed by another loud noise that sounded kind of like, "Be patient, Papa Dinosaur, the trap is not yet sprung." But that could have been rock falling or a squirrel. Either way, Goldilocks was not the type of little girl who listened to anyone or anything. For example, Goldilocks never listened to warnings about the dangers of barging into strange, enormous houses. So as soon as Goldilocks came across a strange, enormous house, she barged right in. Go ahead. Inside, Goldilocks immediately smelled the three bowls of delicious chocolate pudding. "Mmm," said Goldilocks, "that pudding smells delicious. If only I could get all the way up to the top of that counter." Then Goldilocks noticed a very tall ladder that just happened to be there and certainly was not left there on purpose. Goldilocks climbed up the ladder and found herself face to face with three gigantic bowls of chocolate pudding. The first bowl of chocolate pudding was too hot, but Goldilocks ate it all anyway because, hey, it's chocolate pudding, right? The second bowl of chocolate pudding was too cold, but who cares about temperature when you've got a bowl of chocolate pudding? Not her. And the third bowl of chocolate pudding was just right, but Goldilocks was on such a roll by now she hardly even noticed. Soon, Goldilocks was stuffed like one of those delicious chocolate-filled little girl bonbons. Which, by the way, are totally not the favorite things in the whole world for hungry dinosaurs. So tired and groggy, Goldilocks noticed three chairs in the living room, so she climbed down the ladder and walked out of the kitchen. The first chair was too tall. The second chair was too tall. But the third chair was too tall. Now, Goldilocks wasn't going to climb that high just to sit in some chair, so she hiked over to the bedroom. And when she got there, Goldilocks noticed that the beds were also gigantically big. "What's going on around here?" groaned the exhausted little girl. "The bears that live here must be nuts." Just then, the room filled with a loud, booming noise that was either a passing truck or a dinosaur gloating, "A few more minutes and she'll be asleep. Delicious chocolate-filled little girl bonbons are yummier when they're rested." Now, even a little girl who never listens to anyone or anything had to hear that. Go ahead and turn it. Goldilocks took a minute to stop and think, which was longer than she was used to stopping and thinking. Go ahead. "Hey," she told herself, "this isn't some bear's house. This is some dinosaur's house." Now, say what you like about Goldilocks, but she was no fool. As quickly as she could, she ran to the back door and got out of there. Just then, a loud plane flew by, which sounded pretty much like a trio of dinosaurs yelling, "No!" or "Charge!" or the Norwegian expression for "Chewy bonbon time." And suddenly, and completely coincidentally, three dinosaurs rushed through the front door. But they were too late. Go ahead. Goldilocks was gone, and all that was left in the house were three disappointed dinosaurs. The end. Turn. And the moral is, if you ever find yourself in the wrong story, leave. And go, hey, whoa, not quite done. And the moral for the dinosaurs is lock the back door. All right.
Now's the time for our joys and sorrows. I invite you to come forward to share your joys and concerns by placing stones in our water bowl. There are small bowls located by the doors in the front and the back of the sanctuary, as well as by the water. Take as many stones as needed to represent your joys and our concerns. So please come down the aisle by the piano and return to your seats on the other side, so to make a circle.
You'll join with me in the spirit of meditation and prayer. This morning, I want us to hold in the light all those who are in need of comfort, who are in need of encouragement, who are in need of peace. To begin with, please let's hold in the light the UU congregation in Traverse City, Michigan, who a few days ago experienced multiple homicide and suicide that included four members of their congregation, one family. Please, please keep them in your hearts this morning, as this is the first morning that they are gathering together to mourn those losses. Into this holy silence, you're welcome to speak the name of anyone that you would like to hold in the light. Jack Espinosa. Me. Everybody. It's Kirk. As we send light and love to the leaders in our communities, in our country, we ask for them what we ask for ourselves, that they walk humbly and walk faithfully. We ask energy and light and prayers for all of those across this world who stand in harm's way, and to seek to intervene, to help, and to care, that they're supported and loved by this community.
Now it's time for the offering. We receive from this church the opportunity to explore meaning, purpose, and value in our lives. How does the money you give reflect what you receive? As you give to our plate this morning, you are invited to consider how your spiritual life, that life of meaning and value and purpose, are enhanced through giving. This morning's offering will be greatly received. May it be joyfully given.
Please join in reciting the offering blessing. To the work of the church, which is weaving a tapestry of love we call community, we dedicate ourselves and these our offerings.
Yeah. And my time was running wild in the dead-end streets. And every time I thought I got it made, it seemed the taste was not so sweet. So I turned myself to face me. But I've never caught a glimpse of how the others must see the faker. I'm much too fast to take that test.
Change it.
Turn and face the strain.
Change it.
Don't wanna be a richer man.
Change it.
Turn and face the strain.
Change it.
It's gonna have to be a different man. But never leave the stream of warm and permanent sand. So the days float through my eyes, but still the days seem the same. And these children that you spit on as they try to change their worlds are immune to your consultations. They're quite aware of what they're going through.
Changes.
Turn and face the strain.
Changes.
Don't tell them to blow up and out of it.
Changes.
Turn and face the strain.
Changes.
Where's your shame? You've left us up to her next to me.
It's not in any of the books, so you're just going to have to watch it up here. Let me get it up here in a second. That'll pop. And so if your rises, your spirit and body call, and we're going to be singing. Are the lyrics up? Do we have the lyrics? Did that get in there?
I think so.
Or maybe we won't be doing this hymn. Oh. All right. Well, we were going to be doing the hymn, which many of you may know this song. It's Bob Dylan's The Times They Are Changin'. So actually, do I have that in the, I may not have that in my iPod back there. I mean, if you got the lyrics, then we can do it, but I don't think we have enough handouts for everybody to sing. All right, we'll just move along. All right, so for those of you that know that song, The Times They Are Changin', if you, I'll remind you of a couple of lyrics that are important to it as we begin. So, good morning. I'm glad to be here. I have been in the area for about 3 years. We just 3 years that we moved here from New York City. And as in the introduction, I'm a community minister affiliated with Emerson UU Chapel, but I actually get to serve all four congregations as currently the only UU community minister in the area. And this is the first time in your pulpit on Sunday morning. However, I've done a number of weddings here for you. And I've been, some of you have seen me doing weddings for some folks here. So I'm grateful to finally be able to see you guys on a Sunday morning. The song that we just listened to, Changes by David Bowie, that song has had special meaning for me for, oh, it's almost now 30 years. I really first got acquainted with that song in high school, as probably a lot of us did at different points of when we hit high school. But for me, and in particular, it was really meaningful. At the high school I went to, we had a filmmaking program. And so I was part of, one of the senior filmmakers. And we're going back, this is the late 80s. So we're going back, there was not video, this was not camcorders, there was no digital anything. This was Super 8 film that got developed and we cut by hand and taped together with little pieces of tape. And then when it came to a soundtrack, we actually, you ran the film and then hoped that you hit the play on the tape recorder at the same time so that everything would sync up. Right? It sounds like a number of you know what I'm talking about in here. And so we worked as a senior film team, we worked the entire year documenting, going out to almost every event you could imagine throughout the year and documenting all of our senior year and then put this, I mean, it's almost an hour-long film together that was presented at the senior banquet in the spring right before graduation. And for the theme that we chose and the theme song we chose was that Bowie song, Changes. So when I hear that, that song, part of me always goes back to that period of time, that being a senior in high school, getting ready to graduate. For me, that song and change meant something really exciting. It meant something new. For me, it meant moving away from home. For a lot of us at school, it meant moving away from home, moving out on our own. Some of us were going to college. Some of us were going into the military. Some of us were just going to go start a trade school. But it meant adulthood, the beginnings of a new life, our own lives. And then turn and face the strange. Man, we were the strange. And we were excited to be the strange, and kind of being the strange was the whole point of it. So it was really, it's always for me kind of meaningful. An unknown was an adventure, at least for me and most of my friends. It wasn't an adventure for everybody in my graduating class. And that's the case for a lot of folks. Adventure isn't always, or change isn't always adventure. But for a lot of us, it was. That unknown. And largely, it was because we felt that we were growing into ourselves. And for many of us, it meant we were also going to begin to grow into our dreams and who we wanted to become. It was an exciting time. But the unknown and change is, transitions are. You don't have to attach good or bad, positive, negative. They're just going to happen. Regardless of whether you want it to or not, they are. Change is, transitions happen. They are happening, whether we like it or not, whether we want it to, whether they go in the directions we like. The place that we look to, particularly I think in encompassing in the container of faith community, is finding a way to either come to acceptance of change, of the changes that are happening, some way to connect to, some way to roll with whatever changes are happening. And that's hopefully what we're getting to here this morning. So the two songs, well, one we heard and one many of us will have in memory, but two songs that I kind of wanted to focus on today, The Changes and Bob Dylan's The Times They Are A-Changing. These are both written by young people. I know now we don't really think of Bob Dylan as having been a young person, but at the when he wrote that song, he was a young man. And when David Bowie wrote Changes, he was also, you know, he was a young man. And here's the lyric that I really want to think about around the Bob Dylan song. Here's this lyric. Don't criticize what you can't understand. Your old road is rapidly aging. Please get out of the way of the new one if you can't lend your hand, for the times they are changing. Oh, look at that. That's even the lyric I wanted. Thank you. All right, so there's Bob Dylan. And then the David Bowie song. These children that you spit on as they try and change their worlds, they're immune to your consultation. They are quite aware of what they're going through. Those lyrics from those two young people are so profound to me right now in the time that we're in the world that we're existing in. They are so profound. Because we are living in a time when changes are happening and being led by young people, by young adults, by youth. And it's so strong. It's so profound. It's so deep for me. Think about the first time you heard those songs, either one of those songs, if you think back to what they stirred in you, how they spoke to you. Now, when I first heard those songs, even the Dylan, I wasn't the first generation that heard the Dylan, but when I heard it, I was in that adolescent stage, that young person place, right? And when I heard those songs, they were speaking to me, and they were speaking for me. Interestingly enough, now I gotta say, they're speaking about me. And I would venture to guess that most of us in here, I don't know how it happened, I don't know when it happened, but we're the ones that they're speaking about. We're the ones who need to take a minute and step off. Let them lead. And if we're not gonna jump on board, then we need to not get in the way of the times that are a change in. It's powerful. So turn and face the strange. You know, the interesting thing is, the older it gets, the older that we get, the older that I get, it seems the strange is often more frightening than it is exciting. Seems like maybe it could be that there's more at stake. It feels like that there's more danger, more to watch out for. Like, I don't know, maybe there's some dinosaurs out there plotting. So the Goldilocks book that we read earlier, I've got a 3-year-old and a 5-month-old at home, and the 5-month-old doesn't get it yet, but the 3-year-old, we've been reading that book since he was a little one, and we love that book at our house. If he had been here this morning, he has it memorized. He would have been saying it before I say it as it comes up. We love that book. And the thing that I really love about the book is the moral at the end. If you find yourself in the wrong story, leave. Now, it's important here to define leave. For some people, it may not mean physically extricating yourself from a situation. That is certainly one way to leave. But to leave, if you find yourself in the wrong story, leave could mean to leave how you're interpreting an experience, your participation in an experience. For Goldilocks, it was actually get out the back door, right? And for some of us, it can mean get out the back door, get out the front door, find a window, find a way, do what you have to do to get yourself out of a physical situation. But when you find yourself in the wrong story, leave could also mean leaving a belief that you have, leaving a behavior that you have, leaving a theology, an embedded theology that is unhealthy for you. So I just want to look at the bigger picture of what leave could mean as we think about it, all right? And the bigger point of the whole book, I think, and the point that I want to focus on for the rest of the sermon here, is really that you get to choose again. Goldilocks gets to make another choice. Now, it's not easy for Goldilocks to make another choice because she was somebody who doesn't listen to anybody or anything, right? And if you're a person that doesn't listen to anyone or anything, it's hard to notice things going on around you, right? If you are stuck in habits are unconscious, and being stuck in a habit often means that you are not aware that you're making choices, making the same choice over and over again, because it's a habit. Does this make sense? Right? You're stuck in a habit, you don't realize that there may even be other choices because you don't even recognize you're making a choice. So if Goldilocks, and when she did finally stop and pay attention, she actually saw clues. When she saw those clues and recognized that these clues were actually there the entire time, she just didn't notice them. But when she stopped and paid attention, she was able to make a different choice and leave. Now, she left and went to bears. Bears may not always be the ideal option, right? We don't know what the bear piece is, right? And bears may not eventually wind up being the ultimate place that she would love to be in, but bears are her story, right? And there's another slide come up, but we'll see if we get to it in a second. There's a piece, we'll get to it in a second. Oh, yeah, we're ready for that slide back there. So this story, I highly recommend this book. At the front and the, thank you, the front and the back cover of this book, this is how the author has it, you might not be able to read from back there, but it's like Goldilocks and the Three Mice, Goldilocks and the Three Clams, Goldilocks and the Three Rocket Scientists, Goldilocks and the Three Giants, right? There's a whole bunch of Goldilocks and the Three Pirates. There's all sorts of options up there. And actually, that's the front cover. On the back cover, this is all, again, there's like, there's gotta be 50, 70 different options there. And on the back cover, it's got all of these crossed off, and they're different ones. And in the middle is finally one that says Goldilocks and the Three Bears, and it's circled. So one of the things that I think is really interesting about this, as certainly a bigger metaphor for the book, is I think it could be that these stories, that these are the stories that she tried along the way until she got to the one that was a circle. It could be that these are the ones she thought about trying and then went, I know, no, no. Oh, what? Maybe not. Or what? Maybe she tested them all out and went, bad idea, bad idea, right? Bad idea. Right? She took a scientific method to it. Yeah, absolutely. No, that using a scientific method, and I don't know what the author intended, but I think we could certainly take any of those interpretations away from this as possibilities. The piece is, and what I think these two pages, even in the bigger part of the scope of the book, is this shows that there are options, that there were actually a lot of options. There wasn't just one option of Goldilocks and the Three Bears. There's a whole lot of possibilities that could and did happen as the course of the story went. So I hadn't thought about this, and you can turn this one off now. Thank you, Ken. I hadn't really thought about this bigger concept until about, I don't know, it's like now it's 17, 18 years ago. I was a stand-up comic in New York City for about 5 years. And I had a coach that I worked with for a number of those years. And this coach, his name was Tim, he'd been working with comics at that point for probably 15, 19, 18 years. And he had developed a theory, and I'm just gonna put this out here right now, this is very gender binary language around his theory. This is the early 90s, there was not necessarily a whole lot of language about spectrum of gender, understandings of gender on a spectrum, let alone language around it, and he really has this in binary. So I'm gonna give it to you as it was given to me, and understand this in the terms that it came up with. But he had a theory that came out of being witness and working with comics for many years. And he actually stopped working. He wouldn't coach male comics in general, male comics that were starting up anymore, because of this thing that he had watched. And what he would see is that with new male comics coming up, male-bodied comics coming up, they generally picked one of two topics to write jokes about. It was either gonna be scatological, bathroom, everything having to do with bathroom humor, or it was sex and genitalia. Those were the two types of jokes that they were gonna write. That's it. Now, that is really limited in terms of your material topics, right? But it doesn't stop them. And I would say, if any of you are into comedy, if you go into comedy clubs or if you watch new comics coming up, see if that is not actually the case and if you do not see that happening over and over again, right? So they would pick one of these two categories generally. And so that was, again, not so broad of topics. However, because of either how they're conditioned, how they're socialized, they were willing to step 100% behind these jokes and go with them until the end. Because of that commitment, often they could get a laugh, they could get a result from it, because they would go to the nth degree with it, right? So that was a positive piece, with the negative of not having a whole lot of material to work with. Now, on the other hand, what would be generically termed like female-bodied comics, typically, Tim, my coach would see, could see like 5, 6, 7 ideas for jokes that hit a whole bunch of different, on the same kind of topic, but they could come up with 8, 9, a rainbow of ideas for jokes, which was really incredible when it came to creativity and just trying something new. The problem was, most female comics were very unwilling to step 100% behind those jokes and push them to the nth degree if they were met with heckling or just silence until the people caught up with them. And so then would start on start with one idea and then back off and then try another one of the ideas. And then, okay, that one didn't quite work, I'm gonna go with the other. So often wouldn't get the results because they wouldn't push it to the next level. So the positive on this side was all these great ideas, but unwillingness, and the negative was unwillingness to commit 100% because with all these ideas, which one's the right one? Which is the right one? So for Tim, he chose to stop working with Male Comics because basically they wouldn't listen, they were not willing at the early level to go beyond those two categories. And where he focused his attention was with the female comics because he believed he could come up with techniques to help people overcome that fear of committing to something and overcome that myth of the one right choice. Right? Now, when you look at a bigger picture of actually really good comics of whatever gender configuration and understanding, when you look at the really good ones that are like on television and do movies, they actually are able to combine those two. Right? They have a whole lot of choices and can stick with it and push through the fear, the stopping, the hesitation, maybe the understanding that you guys might not think it's funny yet, but I know it's funny and you're gonna go with me till we get there. Right? Really good comics can have both of those things, and that's what makes them really good comics. Let me give you an example. There's a lot of examples if you think back, if you like comedy, you can think of it. But one that was particularly meaningful to me, Tim used to talk about him, and this is a cis male comic, and I saw him a number of times in person at the little club where I worked. And this comic not only saw like 8 or 9, but would see 15, 18 different choices and had the stuff to push through and go beyond 100%, whether or not anybody else was going with him, would go there. And you know what? Even when jokes bombed, he would go to the end. And if it still was bombing and he couldn't make it funny, you know, okay, well, this isn't working. Time two, we're gonna try this one. And he would just pick another one of the 15 and go with it until he got somewhere with it. And that was Robin Williams. Right? Robin Williams could see jokes that nobody could imagine and go places that you could not even imagine and keep going even if nobody else got it until he got there. Quite remarkable. Quite remarkable. He was not hostage to this myth of the right choice. Now, I've seen this, taking it out of the context of comedy, I've seen this idea applied in so many life situations. I've seen it applied, it applies to me, it is applied just all over the place. So many of us have been conditioned to this idea that there is one right choice, one way for happy ending to look, and so we get stuck. I mean, I think even the idea that there is supposed to be a happy ending is a place where we get stuck. And that's something that is conditioned to us in this culture through media, through television, through songs, through film, through books. That is what we're taught, is that there's a happy ending or there is a one way that this is supposed to play out. When I was in high school, I started to watch a soap opera. I started to watch All My Children. It was on when I got home from school, and so, you know, I kind of got hooked into it, and it was a lot drama, and it was fun, and it was fantasy, and it was all those things that soap operas are. And I was an actor for many years, and like I said, a comic, and so how stories are told has been interesting to me. And when I got a little bit older and was thinking about soap operas, one of the things that I think is really interesting about soap operas is that they don't have an ending. They actually mimic real life better than movies, television, drama shows, sitcoms. In a soap opera, there is no end, right? The next episode is just starts the next day. There's no reruns, and there's no wrapping things up at the end. It just goes on. That's a much better reflection of how real life really is, right? In a soap opera, some days are great and for some characters, and other days tragedy happens, and then they're heroes, and then something awful happens. And this up and down, the heroes turn into villains, turn into heroes, turn into villains. This character is important and the focus now, and then this character is the focus, and this one's a background piece, and then you're each other's cousins, and all that stuff happens too. But but in our own lives, we play different parts. We play the villain, we play the hero, we play the background character, we're the star. That's actually more what real life is than at the end of an hour, the entire drama or the entire story is wrapped up, neat and done, and then you start on a completely new chapter. That's not how it works for us, but that's how we're taught it's supposed to work. Right? So going against that conditioning is really hard with the idea of choose again. That myth of the one right choice is reinforced culturally for us. And that's a difficult one, and so we can get stuck. So don't get stuck in your choice. Don't get hamstrung by your choice. Don't get eaten by a Norwegian dinosaur because you didn't take the time to stop and to pick up the clues that have been around you the whole time. This really speaks to me of one of our principles, actually, one of our seven principles. The principle, the free and responsible search for truth and meaning. I love the way that that principle is worded. It is the free and responsible search for truth and meaning. What it is not the free and responsible search for the truth and the meaning. Right? We're going to come to different understandings of truth and meaning, different ones between us, and I would say different ones of us at different times in our lives. If I think about even these two songs that I keep connecting to, the Bob Dylan times that they are changing and the Bowie's changes, right? My understanding and the truth and meaning that those songs spoke to me as a 15, 17, 18, 19-year-old are very different than the truths and the meaning that they speak to me today as a 45-year-old. But they're still truth, and they are still meaningful. Being able to recognize that and see that, I think, is actually a real, really positive thing that we have, but that's counterculture, right? When I personally, it kind of drives me crazy when I see folks giving politicians a hard time for being a flip-flopper. You had this idea, now you have this idea. For me, I think it's actually pretty great that if you get some new information, you're able to incorporate it and maybe make a different choice and come up with a different stance on things. That's not necessarily so bad. That's not necessarily so bad. Because we get back into the idea that there is this plethora, right, this rainbow of options. Picking one, seeing if it works. If it doesn't, no harm, no foul, go this direction. Now, I want to also acknowledge that the idea of changes and picking different options and seeing how things go is not always happy, fun, and exciting, right? There are times when these transitions are painful, are difficult, are as a result of tragedy and heartbreak that happens, and that's true too. Sometimes those are the times that it is hardest to be willing to step back and to choose again, because we're physiologically can be stuck at those times, physiologically, emotionally, spiritually, mentally, can be really at a place where we don't think we can move. This is what community's for, to be with us and to stick with us in those times and eventually to be able to be support in maybe being able to see those other options. Right? So I wanna acknowledge that pain is also part of this as well. And that's also true. And that life transitions do give us the opportunity to look for those options, to look for something different, to go past the first couple of things that we see and see what else might be out there for us. Sometimes these life transitions, that is the breakthrough time, right? I would also say that when you really are willing to do this, when you are on, when you've got the internal fortitude, that freedom to choose again, to commit to something and then not regret to having to make another choice, that that's not a failure, that's an openness and a flexibility that is actually full of strength rather than a weakness. When you can do this, what do you think the chances are that you're actually going to be able to do the things that you were put here on this life, on this earth, in this life to do? There's a big work out here that we all need to do. There is such big work that is needed to be done in ourselves, in our families, in this community, in the larger community, in our world. There is big work that is needed by us. We need to be willing to take a breath, to see different options, and maybe choose again. One of the things that's amazing about the interdependent web of all existence is that when we change something, it actually affects the rest of the web. That there is a connection there. But in order to do that, we have to be present. We have to be conscious. We must be willing and we must be bold. So turn and face the strange. We've got big work to do in this life. And you know, the people who love you and the people who you love are counting on you to do your work. They need you to do your work. We need you to do your work. We need us to do our work. And out there needs us to do our work too. There is big stuff. And I think that as Unitarian Universalists, we have a saving message to bring to the world. We have some things that we bring with this interdependent web of life. When we change something, it changes the world. And this is what we're here to do. Step up, be bold, be courageous, be that change. Amen, ashe, and blessed be. Sure. Yeah, let's do that as the final hymn.
Ken, can you get this back up? The times are changing, and we'll sing this as our final hymn.
All right. So if you'll join with us, rise as body and spirit allow. Join us in some Bob Dylan. We receive fragments of holiness, glimpses of eternity, brief moments of insight. Let us gather them up for the precious gifts they are and be renewed by their grace. Move boldly into the unknown. Blessed be. Amen and Ashe. Go in peace.